The Supreme Court decision, for the most part, upheld the Affordable Care Act, and that seems like a win for the uninsured. But according to the Congressional Budget Office, it may be that 3 million people wind up uninsured because of the Supreme Court's ruling. That's because of they did not uphold the individual mandate of the Medicaid expansion. They did not force states to buy into the Medicaid expansion. Joining us now to explain is our D.C. correspondent, Todd Zwillick. So, Todd, in the days after the Supreme Court ruling, mostly what people were talking about was political scorekeeping, right? Just trying to decide whether who won on the side, the Republicans or the president. But what kind of got lost was whether exactly how many people would get insurance or lose insurance because of that ruling.
Sure. The president's agenda was at stake in that Supreme Court ruling, and the agenda of his opposition for full repeal was also at stake. So the politics was understandable. Now this is about people. The CBO yesterday, Celeste, reporting that 6 million fewer people will be able to get onto Medicaid because the Supreme Court has ruled the Medicaid expansion to 133% of poverty in all states is unconstitutional. That part was knocked down. 6 million fewer people will get on Medicaid, but about half of those will take subsidies and jump onto the exchanges that will be available in the states as a result of the Affordable Care Act. The result is that math, which is 3 million fewer people insured than would have had insurance before, but the bill is also $84 billion cheaper over 10 years because taxpayers aren't paying for those 3 million people. Now, the Affordable Care Act is a deficit reducer. That was confirmed by the CBO yesterday, and now, because of the Supreme Court's ruling for the taxpayers, at least $84 billion less than it even would have been after 10 years.
We need to be careful with this math here, Todd, because we don't want to make it sound like there's going to be 3 million people fewer insured because of the Affordable Care Act. That's not the case.
3 million people. Well, it's
in other words, we're
not 3 million, not 3 million less than now, 3 million less than would have been insured under the best case scenario,
right,
in terms of the insured if the bill had remained fully intact. So instead of something roughly 32.5 million, lop 3 off of that of extra people who will be insured under Obamacare.
And for these people who may kind of fall through this loophole, they can either move to a state that has opted into the Medicaid expansion, or they can find the money to go on to the insurance exchange.
They can try to find the money, assuming if they're close enough to the poverty level that they're the working poor, which is what Medicaid is, finding the money to jump onto the exchanges might be difficult.
Yeah.
Some people can take what's called the hardship exemption, which is in the law, which says you don't have to get insurance under the mandate if it causes a financial hardship, I think, of 8% of your income or more. That was the hardship exemption, or they can they can try to move over the border to a state that's more generous. Sure.
And any chance that the House or I'm almost joking, any chance that they would kind of close this loophole up and find a way to cover these people?
Oh, no, not this House, certainly. This House is on record many, many times for repeal, twice for full repeal, other times for defunding and otherwise eviscerating the Affordable Care Act. No, if Democrats somehow were to take control of the House in this election, and that's unlikely, then a closure of that gap might happen. Maybe in the future. This is the type of thing that Congress is due, expand benefits on entitlements like they did with Medicare prescription drugs or the donut hole. Those things may happen in the future, but not anytime soon.
All right. Well, then let's talk about something that I guess has a possibility of happening, or maybe not. You tell me whether or not they're going to get an agreement on these tax cuts before the end of the year. Or, you know, I mean, the president seems to be pushing for that, or some jobs bills before they go on summer recess. That seems unlikely as well.
No agreement before the election, but there's a vote today in the Senate on Democrats' tax plan. We've said this on the show, everybody up to $250,000 gets to keep their Bush tax cuts. That's even the people who make $5 million. Their first $250,000 still gets the tax cut. Beyond $250,001, the rates would go back to 39.6, which is the pre-Bush tax cut rate. Now, largely symbolic, yes, because it's not passing before the election, but this is what the election is all about. This is the billboard of both parties. Democrats are trying to say that Republicans, Mitt Romney especially, but Republicans in Congress are holding tax cuts for all of the middle class hostage to that top income tier, everybody above $250,000, holding it hostage to them getting a tax cut too. Listen to Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor yesterday.
Extending the tax cuts for the middle class is a no-brainer, and the American people are on our side. I hope, I pray, I beseech our friends on the other side of the aisle to listen to the middle class and say, look, you guys fight over what you should do for the highest income people, but come together on helping us.
The big picture here, Celeste, is that Democrats are now saying no deal on the fiscal cliff and all the tax provisions and spending provisions and sequesters that are expiring at the end of the year unless Republicans finally put some revenue on the table. Revenue means some higher taxes.
So it's kind of like a roll call vote today. It sounds like the Democrats are just trying to get people on record either voting in favor of middle class tax cuts or against them.
Sure. But again, that's exactly that is precisely income distribution. When you really look at it, it's precisely what this election is about. Republicans and Democrats both want people to make a choice based on taxes. Republicans next week in the House will forward their bill, which is an extension of the Bush tax cuts for everyone. Just extend all of them. Don't raise any revenue through raising taxes on the wealthy or anybody else. And that's part of the choice in this election. How are we going to distribute income while we try to solve the problem of the $15 trillion debt?
Well, since we're talking about things that won't get resolved before the election or probably before the year, we might as well talk about gun control, right? Since that's the topic of conversation since last Friday's shooting in Colorado. Has the debate changed at all in light of the events in Colorado?
Yesterday was the first day we got to hear from lawmakers, the people who make the laws after the Colorado shooting. Listen to Carolyn McCarthy. She's from New York.
When I think about the families that are in the hospital right now, wondering what's going to happen to their loved ones. What is their life going to be like? They're only beginning this journey. And yet here, we are silent. We are silent.
Carolyn McCarthy's husband was murdered on the Long Island Railroad, Celeste, in 1994, I believe. She was elected to Congress in 1996 because of it. The answer to your question, what's Congress going to do? We heard from the leaders of both parties yesterday. The answer is nothing. Neither party nor the White House is interested in any gun control legislation. So Carolyn McCarthy and her colleagues who want the assault weapons ban renewed won't get it now.
Todd Zwillick is our D.C. correspondent. Thanks so much, Todd.
Pleasure.